Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
So a big welcome to today's Project Love podcast. And today we have Selina in the hot seat because we're going to be diving deep into the topic of life design.
Yes.
And in particular, why we're not all easily designing lives that we love. Mm. Now, this is such a big topic. We were just chatting about it this morning, preparing for this podcast, and there is so much to say.
It's huge.
Yeah. And as always, we're going to try and fit it into between 30, 40 minutes. Wish us luck. When you start unpacking this topic, you realize how many layers there are to it. Mm. So we're going to just dive in and see where the conversation takes us. And I'm going to be asking Selina all the questions I've ever wanted to ask about life design. And we posted a question last week on Instagram stories, asking what do you struggle with the most when it comes to designing a life that you love? And we got so many responses and it's been really interesting to see where people seem to be most blocked or think that they are blocked. Mm. So we'll be throwing some of those into the mix too.
So I think we should start by looking at what we actually mean by designing a life that you love, because I think sometimes that is where the problem begins in terms of what people think that even looks like and how you do it. So I think it's good to start off with what it isn't. So it's not about trying to create a perfect life. And I know that sounds obvious, but I think we can sometimes fall into that trap and be looking at what other people are doing, what other people's lives look like, and start to think, well, that's what I should have, or that will make me happy. It's not about trying to control everything in your life. And it's also not about expecting to be happy 100% of the time. And I think that's where the whole kind of design a life that you love, you just got to be careful that people don't think that we're talking about, you know, you're going to be expecting to love every single area of your life the whole time, because life is hard. Shit happens. You know, this has been a challenging year for a lot of people. But you want to be able to stand back, even in the hard times, and look at the work that you do, the way you live your life and your relationships, and feel really grateful for what you have and to recognize that you really love it. And that really is something that you can design. And I think the other big mistake that people make is to look at people who have lives that they really do love and think, oh, well, they're just lucky. Mm-hmm. They've got it because they have this, they have this, they're like this, they're like that, as if it just sort of fell into their lap. And you speak to anyone who has great relationships or who loves the work that they do, or has a lifestyle that they love, and you ask them if it was down to luck, and they'll be like, are you kidding me? Mm. Like, this was hard, like, to get here. You know, it's taken effort, it's taken hard work. So you take a relationship, you know, if someone's in a really good relationship, it's because they've worked at it, you know, and it's because they continue to work at it. And if someone really loves the work that they do and really has ease around it and joy around it, that's conscious. They didn't just fall into that. You know, obviously there are opportunities that come up and you know, there's certain, sometimes luck plays a part in it. But long-term enjoyment of your work, that's something that you've really made happen. And the same goes for lifestyle and the home that you live in. These things just don't just happen by chance. The reason that people get stuck when it comes to designing a life that you love is not having the tools, not knowing how to do it on a really practical level, and also not having the mindset that supports them. So there's so much we can go into when it comes to the shitty committee. When I was thinking about this, because I've often thought about this would be an interesting topic to get into, but I haven't actually ever really sat down and properly thought about it. But the shitty committee plays a really important part in this. I think of stopping people believing that they can go out there and create a life that they love or they deserve it. That came up more than anything in the responses to the Instagram stories of people going, and what incredible levels of self-awareness to be able to say, I think I don't believe I deserve it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what stops me. And I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's so self-aware. Mm-hmm. But then there's something you can do with that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, where do we begin? I don't know where we begin.
What are some of the most common blockers that you see that get in the way of us living lives that we love?
I don't have the time. I don't have the time. I'm too busy. It is the number one reason people will give for not bringing about the change that they want to see happen in their lives, or not doing the things that they really want to do in their lives. And it's always funny, isn't it? Because we get people to, like, you know, do all sorts of different exercises. And a simple one is just write down all the things you would love to fill your life with. And then you look at them and say, well, why aren't you doing that? And they're like, oh, I just don't seem to find the time. And actually, that's the biggest problem. If you're waiting to have the time, to have this wonderful abundance and luxury of time, I mean, you're literally going to be waiting. Even watching my dad in retirement, he still uses the excuse that he hasn't got the time. And I was like, oh my God, if a retired man is using that excuse, then, I mean, forget it. So it's really about making the time. And that's why I'm so obsessed with your calendar is your canvas when it comes to designing a life you love, because that's where you block in the time. You have to book in time to do the things that you love to do. And it can kind of seem crazy because often people will say, but surely if I really want to do it, then I would just naturally do it. And the answer is no, you won't. And the reason is, and this is a big part of life design, is that it's all about you making your happiness and your well-being a top priority in your life. And we don't naturally do that. And particularly women don't do that because we haven't been told to do that. Quite the opposite. We've been told that a good woman and a good man, a good person, is someone who is of service to others. Actually, no, it really is women that get that message. And it's interesting watching my partner, who is a man, and seeing how much more easily he chooses to do the things that he wants to do. And that's not the case with all men, but I do tend to find my male friends are far better at blocking in time to do things that they love to do. Whereas women are far more likely to use their time to get through a to-do list.
Oh, the to-do list. Oh,
the never-ending to-do list. And so when you think about where you are on your list of priorities, you are below work stuff, family stuff, social stuff, the washing, getting the dishwasher unpacked. Do you know what I mean? Like when you look at it like that, it's like, so why would you expect to ever have the time to do the things that you love? That's why bring it back to the calendar and start blocking in time. Start small. Just choose like a couple of things a week you can commit to doing that are purely for your enjoyment or for you to recharge your batteries and to rest. So, you know, I really use my calendar now to block out time for not going out these evenings, not filling up my calendar with evening stuff because I need to rest. Sleep is like the magic cure for everything. But yeah, it's about making the time, carving out the time and using your calendar to do that. So this is what I mean. It's about, that's such a practical tool.
Yeah.
And once people start doing that, they're like, wow, this really works. And it's so simple. I'm like, I know. So it's actually, I think the biggest blocker, yes, there's stuff around mindset and beliefs of what you think is possible and, you know, about deserving it and all of that. And we can get onto that in a moment. But so much of it is down to just understanding the steps to first getting clear on what it is that you want and not looking at Instagram for inspiration and thinking, oh, that will make me happy. And then following that, but really asking yourself and getting to know yourself and saying, hang on, what will actually make me happy and fulfilled in life? And then going and doing that and filling your life with those things. And then how do you allow yourself to dream and then bring those dreams to life? And I'm an extremely practical, I'm a dreamer and also an extremely practical person. So those two things combined actually lend really well to life design, which is why for me, since my mid-20s, it's been something that has come naturally to me, but it doesn't come naturally to everyone and we don't learn it in school. So why do we expect to know how to do it? And you said something just before this podcast, which was like, poof. I was like, oh my God, that's it.
I was saying, do you think sometimes it's a, you know, it's a lack of skill, and because we don't already possess this skill that we need to achieve X, Y, Z, that we then stop ourselves from having it, or we tell ourselves, oh, we can't do it because we don't yet have the skill, but not realizing, well, we can go and learn that skill.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely, it's like we talk about love. Love is something you can learn to do. So, you know, for years, I just thought I was unlucky in love or rubbish at love, rather than recognizing you can go and learn how to get better at love. I was like, what? It's something, it's a thing that you do. It's something you can get good at. And it's the same with designing a life that you love. I think it's really important that we just scratch off that belief that it's down to luck, that some people are just lucky. because it isn't. And it's really important. I think also another thing we need to challenge is the collective beliefs around living a life that you love, that I think there's an underlying narrative about you shouldn't ask for too much. Mm. Don't be too greedy. And also, here's a biggie, and this will come up a lot. And I'd be interested if it comes up for you in coaching sessions, but it used to come up for me a lot in coaching sessions with people, that they don't want to betray their family by being happier than their parents were. Mm-hmm. Even if they didn't like their parents to get on with them, there is a hardwired thing in us that we don't want, even if the parents are no longer around, mm-hmm. we don't want to show them up by going and having a great relationship mm-hmm. or having loads of money mm-hmm. or having an amazing home if our parents didn't have that mm-hmm. because something in us says, whoa, 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 let's stay within the sort of, you know, the parameters of the tribe.
Yeah.
And my tribe is a hardworking, we struggled, we strived, we survived. If you leave that and you thrive and you have an abundance of money, using that as an example, then you're kind of like, it's as if you're leaving the tribe. And we're so hardwired to think with that comes a risk of being alone, being rejected. Like, there's so much psychological stuff mm-hmm. that's going on under the surface, which is why also, alongside designing a life you love, comes all that work of unpacking those blockers and also practicing self-love. Because what you can do is create a life that looks really good, or even create a life that really can make you happy. If you don't know how to love yourself and don't have a good relationship with yourself, you won't enjoy that life. And I had that for a while. So when I was just in a phase of busily making things happen, and I loved my career, but I was constantly with this sort of sadness that sort of I kept hidden, you know, in my jacket pocket, wherever it was, under the surface. And that was because I, in my busyness to like make things happen, I was totally neglecting myself and my relationship with myself. I gave myself no quality time. I barely knew myself in that way. Once I started doing that, really, once I met you, the lady of love, then actually, suddenly, I was able to really enjoy this life that I had. And because I was enjoying the relationship myself, and then a whole other area of my life started to flourish. And I think that's the other thing as well, to recognize that I look at life like one huge creative project. I don't expect all of it to be like flourishing, you know, and or let's look at it like a garden, Vicky. We love a garden analogy.
Ooh, our favorite analogy.
You got to get the weeds out. You got to plant the seeds. You got to tend to different parts of the garden. And, you know, you can't always tend to all the parts of the garden. Something like, oh, hold on, relationship, friendship area, that needs some attendance. Mm-hmm. That keeps, you know, often comes up for me because I'm busy with family and busy with work. And I'm like, oh, hang on. I need some sisterhood time. Mm-hmm. Let's sort that out. Let's get it in the diary. Mm. And then there it is.
Let's get the doodle.
Let's get the doodle out and spend months trying to find a date we can all do. But, you know, so it's just about looking at it like that. I think it's also the sort of the way that you look at it. And because, yeah, I guess I look at life like one very exciting creative project full of possibility. Mm. I love it. And also then, of course, there is the whole side of allowing yourself to dream and making those dreams happen. And you will have heard me say it before probably, but what for me, the magic we have as human beings is our unique ability to be able to, with our imagination, dream up something that doesn't yet exist. And then through action and through your calendar, make it happen. And that there is something so fulfilling. Like you've experienced it, mm-hmm. you know, in Project Love, when we'll be like, we'll set an intention, put a little dream out there, and then we'll go out there and we'll talk about it and we'll take action. And then all of a sudden, like with Goodbye Hello being an Oliver bonus, it's like, it's seeing a dream become reality. Mm-hmm. You feel the magic, you feel the fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So actually, I think a big part of human fulfillment does come from doing that. It doesn't have to be huge dreams. It can be tiny dreams. It can be even imagining, like looking at your bedroom and imagining what you want it to look like and then buying the paints to fit that color and getting the pieces and moving things around. And then suddenly you've created it and this, you had that vision and now you're living in it and you're sleeping in it every night. And so that's, for me, that's why I really see it as being the artist of your own life. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at it like that as well, that reminds you to embrace that it's not supposed to be perfect. Mm. You don't have artists standing at a canvas thinking, right, let's paint a perfect picture. I mean, what a way to kill the creative vibe. And actually that's, you know, the same way as artists and scientists, it's all about experimenting and exploring. Mm. You know, it's not about trying to control and make everything look exactly as you had imagined. Because the other thing is, your imagination has its limits. So you might imagine, as I once did, that I really wanted to be a jewelry designer and waft around the world, traveling. I don't know what I thought I was doing in these travels around the world being a jewelry designer, but that was in my head. So then I tried it out. I was like, right, I'm going to give myself 3 months to really try this. I created a necklace design, a ceramic necklace design, and designed a brand with my housemate at the time and really enjoyed elements of it and set up, made the necklaces. Sold about 10 necklaces, made money for the first time with something that I had created. I realized that I did not want to be a jewelry designer because I found it actually incredibly dull. Not saying that being a jewelry designer is dull, but I found it dull. But what I learned in the process was how much I love business and me coming up with a brand and just like, I definitely want to have my own business. This is really exciting to me. But not a jewelry designer. Mm. So it's like, okay, well, I tried the dream out. I've learned from trying it out. Mm. And I've decided that I don't want to have that dream anymore. Mm. On to another one. So that's the other thing as well, is just recognizing that you're allowed to adapt and change it. You've got to try things out. And also the other thing I would say is that, you know, with the really big dreams, it's knowing what to do with them. So, you know, we've done a whole podcast on this, on why we all need to learn how to learn to dream again, and how, particularly as children, we're given the strong message of stop dreaming, stop being such a dreamer. It's a waste of time. And actually, I mean, that is such a crime because, like I say, the fulfillment that comes from bringing your dream to life. But again, people don't know what to do with that. So I'm just like, tell me the pipe dreams. Tell me the crazy big dreams. And they might have one that seems completely unrealistic considering the life they have right now. But it's about going, right, let's unwrap that dream. See what is the experience, what are the experiences that lie at the core of that dream? Mm. And how could you actually make that, bring that experience to life, bring that dream to life in a small way? So you and I have talked about this with your Ibiza dream. Mm. You know, rather than think, right, I want to be able to go off and live in Ibiza indefinitely or even for a couple of years, why not bring it down to a size that is manageable? Mm. Why don't you start off with how about 6 weeks? Mm. And then suddenly it's like, oh, well, that we can do. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem so impossible. And then if that's really like, oh my God, yeah, this is it, then the next step. So it's also about taking those dreams and then seeing, okay, considering the situation I have at the moment, what's available to me, how can I craft and shape that dream and maybe bring it down to a more manageable size for now? Try that out, and then we can see, you know, the next step and where it goes. So it is really about, I think, being taught how to do it.
Yeah. And taking action as well. Everything you're saying is all about just taking the first step, yeah, and then the step after that and the step after that and keep going. It's like this series of stepping stones to, yeah, get you from where you are now to where you want to be.
Yeah.
But do some people, and I know we heard a lot on Instagram stories about this, you know, the feeling that they are not worthy of their desires and the fears that stop us from actually taking the first step. Mm. What would you say to someone who isn't taking that next step because they are so paralyzed by fear?
Okay, so first of all, try and take an even smaller step. If you're still totally paralyzed by fear, then I would definitely go and see someone that can help you look into that and help heal whatever wounds are open and unhealed and creating and causing that fear. This is why the Shitty Committee, you know, we talk about the importance of learning how to turn down the volume on your Shitty Committee. The Shitty Committee is that negative, critical voice that we all have in our heads. And I think it's recognizing when you embark on making a dream happen or a new idea happen, or even saying, I want to fill my life with the things that I love, your Shitty Committee is going to go fucking nuts. It's going to have a meltdown. It is going to call. It's like going to be immediately calling like a crisis meeting.
A board meeting.
Yeah, like everyone in. This woman needs to be stopped. She's mad. So the Shitty Committee is where all your limiting beliefs are. your fears, your doubts, and everyone has one, and it's turned up or turned down, and you can learn how to turn it down. It's a really good idea to do that because life is a lot easier and a lot more enjoyable when you have it turned down low. And that is done through therapy, traditional therapy, alternative therapies. I always say, don't try to be your own therapist. I tried that for a long time and it did not work successfully. You do usually need another person to help you. So, sometimes it requires getting that kind of help. I think it's also really, really, really important to stress that when you come up with an idea and you decide, right, I'm going to make this happen, it is the most natural thing in the world that you are going to freak out, your shitty committee is going to get triggered, and you're going to think that you've lost your mind, you've gone crazy. Who are you to think you can do this? Are you mad? What if you fail? Everyone's going to laugh. Mm-hmm. Then what? And it's like, so all of that stuff comes up. That's a really natural part of any creative journey. And Elizabeth Gilbert talks about this in her book, Big Magic. And I think if someone as successfully creative as Liz Gilbert acknowledges that this is a absolute certainty, anytime you embark on a creative journey or decide you want to create change in your life or make a dream come true, fear will be there for the ride. So she talks about getting in the car at the beginning of a creative journey. It's like she steps into the car with inspiration by her side and fear. And she says this little thing to fear. She said, look, along the lines of, I know that you have to come on this journey with us. Like on a road trip. She's like, we've got a few rules. You're going to sit in the back. You are not going to be the one that chooses what radio station we listen to. And you're definitely not going to be the one behind the driving, behind the driving wheel. But accepting that fear is going to be there. Mm. And so I certainly don't want people to think that, I'm skipping along all confident all the time, designing this, designing that, creating a wonderful life. I have the anxieties. I have the self-doubts. I have, it's all there. And it's hard work sometimes. I don't have it as much as I used to. I've definitely learned how to manage it. And it's all about learning, tools you can use to help manage the anxieties. But of course it's there. We're human beings, And if you step out of your comfort zone, which you do anytime you try something new, you're going to freak out a bit, And I think it's really important to know that that is actually a very natural part of the journey. And it's not a sign that something is wrong. Because if you've never really done something like that before and you like go, right, I want to do this thing. I'm going to try this thing out. I'm going to put on an event, for example. You've never done something like that before. It's a vulnerable thing to do. Mm-hmm. If you start feeling anxious, start hearing that voice, the shitty committee saying this is a disaster, it's not going to work, pointing out all the ways it could fail, you might think, oh, well, this is a sign that it's wrong. And it isn't going to work, so I better stop and give up. Or you sabotage it. Mm. Rather than going, all right, here we go. The shitty committee's in town. Let's have a sit down and try and calm it down and see what I can do. Talking it through with a friend. Like even talking about it makes me feel anxious. I can feel it, It's just, and it's about learning how to manage that. Mm. And just accepting that that's a part of the journey. And just keep going, keep taking the actions, put them in your calendar, do them. And, over time, as you get through that first initial bit, usually your shitty committee calms down. It's like, oh, okay, this doesn't seem as bad as we initially thought. Yes. It does seem to be actually working out. Okay, well, we'll be back in case, there's any need for alarm. But for now, yeah, all right, crack on.
And we forget that every time we've done something that has taken us out of our comfort zone, it feels so good when you do it and you were scared and you did it anyway. But we forget that. The last time I was out of my comfort zone, I did it anyway. I felt the fear and I did it anyway. And it felt so good, reminding ourselves of that. The last time this happened, nothing awful happened.
Exactly.
So maybe it will be fine the next time I go out my comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly. And just reminding yourself, okay, this is what always happens. I always freak out like this. I always think it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to take the action. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, shitty committee. Thanks for voicing your concerns.
So how do you know the difference between what's the shitty committee and what's, that primitive fear that we all have, the fear of humiliation? What is that voice versus, more loving, wise voice that's actually wanting you to, only invest time and energy into something that's going to really be suited to you if it's a job, for example.
Yeah.
So, how do you know what's the fearful voice and what's a, very wise and practical voice?
Okay. There's actually a third voice, the sensible voice. First of all, I would say about that wise, loving voice who's looking out for you, who wants the best for you, that side of you cannot read the future. So if you need to try something out and then gauge, is this bringing me alive? Is this really nourishing me? Am I really enjoying this? You won't know until you try. So that loving voice will never say, well, actually, that's not true. I suppose your intuition can sometimes see red flags and it's just like, I believe you're repeating the same mistake as last time by stepping into yet another job with they want you to be 24/7 on demand, like back away. So you do need to listen to that. And I think sometimes if you're willing to go, look, let's try it out and see. If you're not sure, if there are those voices of doubt. But the way you can tell if it's your shitty committee is that tune in and give it a voice. If my shitty committee sounds like a freaking out, petulant, either 5-year-old or teenager, and it's always very dramatic or kind of shrieking, like, no, 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 I don't. Or like this sort of like, oh my God, this is going to be such a disaster, or cruel. You know, like, who are you to think that you can do this? And then I know, I'm like, that's definitely the shitty committee, because there's nothing, there's no love in that voice. So I think it's listening to the voice. But there's also the sensible voice. So if, for example, you're thinking of quitting your job and just seeing what happens, and there's a voice going, okay, but if in 3 months' time you don't have money to pay rent, what the hell are you going to do? Don't ignore that voice. That's actually quite a useful question. Please don't ignore that voice. That's a really useful question. It might feel like a boring question to the free spirit in you that just wants to quit your job and go off and have adventures. But the reality of it is that, you know, you do need to listen to that sensible voice and go, okay, let's sit down and think about this. What would I do? What is the contingency plan? You know, if that doesn't work out, what would I do then? And if that doesn't work out, what would I do then? And that sometimes also really helps that panicking, freaking out, shitty committee as well.
Yeah.
Is if it's going, oh my God, what are you doing? There's no certainty to this. What if it doesn't work and you're left homeless on the streets? It's like, okay, well, before that happens, what would the other options be? And you really think practically about, okay, and if that doesn't work out, then what? And if that doesn't work out, then what? So then you recognize actually there are loads of sort of safety nets before you get to being penniless on the streets, which, and people jump surprisingly fast to that being a fear. But what if I lose all my money and then I don't have a home? It's just like, wow, there's quite a few things you'll do before that happens. You think you're okay. And actually, do you know what? It was the podcast with Penny and Will from Brookhouse Woods. Ah, Penny, at the end, when we asked her what advice she would give to people who have a dream and, you know, they want to make it happen. And she said, do it. We're in our society, we are so privileged to have the support systems we have, even if you don't have family or friends that could support you financially if things don't work out. We have a whole system that is ready that can catch you if you do fall. So really, what is the risk you're taking? You're not ever really you're never risking suddenly just like that being homeless on the streets with no one to help you. You know, so I think it's really important to recognize that, yeah, the sort of how lucky we all are, if you want to talk about luck, to be able to go out there and yeah, create a life that we really love living. And I think that immediately makes me think of a question that some people will have is that, but isn't that a bit selfish? You know, spending all that time and energy on just creating a life that feels good for you. And what I have found is that when people have really worked on their own lives and their relationships and their relationship with themselves, and they really do have that cup is full. And yeah, okay, sometimes things, you know, aren't ideal, but like they're just like, we'll figure it out. They so naturally, the next step, it's, you don't have to force it. They then look to, now what can I do in my community? What can I do for the world around me?
Yeah.
It is when that you're filled up. I see it time and time again. I've seen it myself. I've seen it in the people that I coach. I've seen it in my friends. It is a natural progression to want to go and now give to the world. So far from it being selfish, if you want to look at it from that point of view, it's not just the best thing you can do for yourself. It's also the best thing you can do for the people around you and the world around you. And also, all the great things, great positive changes that happen are dreams that someone believed in and made real. So again, that's all of that has been created out of using life design tools. basically, mm. without people necessarily knowing that that's what they're doing. Mm.
So we could literally talk all day on this topic, but we're conscious that we don't have all day. We only have 6 more minutes in this podcast studio. So to wrap things up, let's finish on one last question. So what's one practical action that someone can take if they were wanting to really, you know, start to go on that journey of really creating a life that they love, or they want to, you know, go deeper into that journey? What's one action that they could take to do that?
Well, I mean, you've kind of said it there, is action. But I think having a think about what it is that you would love to have more of in your life right now. And that could be as simple as a time to relax, fun, time to cook the kind of things I love to cook. And go and schedule time in your calendar this week to do that one thing. Because once you actually do that, that's the moment you start to realize, oh yeah, actually, this is easy. Like it's simple. Mm. I just need to go write in my calendar. And then if you're not good at doing the things in your calendar, put on an alarm or ask a friend to, you know, hold you accountable to do it. So look, I've booked it in for this day. Can you make sure I do it, please? Because sometimes it takes a while to create that strong relationship with your calendar. Mm-hmm. Because I think just in that one simple action, you'll realize what it actually takes to start filling your life with more of the things that you love. And, you know, like you say, it's stepping stone, step by step action towards creating that life that you really want to live, a life that really suits you and feels really good on the inside and perhaps looks fabulous on the outside. But who cares? It's not about getting an Instagrammable life. It's all about how it feels. And of course, the other action would be buy your Goodbye 2018, Hello 2019 copy. And I will say, because I don't know if everyone's aware of this, we're also running a Design a Life You Love in 2019 workshop, an online workshop in January. So getting the two together, the journal and the workshop. So the workshop really shows you how, right, once you've filled out your journal, you've got your vision, you've got your plan, you've really kind of reflected on 2018. Now how do you go forward and make sure that you actually start creating that life for yourself? And so we'll be talking about all sorts of tools and really getting even deeper into this topic. So yeah, head on over to the goodbyehellojournal.com. And sign up.
Very nice. Well, thank you for being in the hot seat.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me hog the microphone for basically 40 minutes of talking about my all-time favourite topic.
Yeah. Well, I've loved it. And we hope you've loved it too.
The Project Love Goodbye 2018, Hello 2019 journal is now on sale.
Goodbye Hello is an end-of-year guide that helps you to say a proper farewell to 2018 as it comes to an end and create a vision and a plan to help you to thrive and create a life you love in the year to come.
Order your copies of the Goodbye Hello Journal now for you and your loved ones over at thegoodbyehellojournal.com.